Well, happy Mother's Day to those of you who are mothers and all of you who have mothers. It is a great day. And what's interesting is that scene from the middle. I mean, you get this. Here you have children. They're trying to understand why their mother chose to walk out of the house angry. And what do? They find themselves falling into yet a comparison trap, right? I mean, they're trying to figure out who said the worst thing. You're worse than me. You cost mom and dad more than I do. And what we begin to realize is this whole comparison game begins very, very early in life. And one other just side note, you know, that song, there actually were some connects in that song to what we're talking about. You know, the whole idea of don't let your kids, your moms don't let your kids play. Have you ever noticed how in country music or Kentucky, words become different? They're guitars, you know, in country music instead of guitars. And, you know, don't let them play guitars and ride trucks. You let them be lawyers and such. Very, very early in life, we begin to play this comparison game. And it goes all throughout life. In fact, one of the things that really intrigues me about this is that, you know, when I think about this topic, I think, man, am I still really dealing with this? I mean, as a 39-year-old, am I still looking over my right shoulder, looking over my left shoulder, looking about what everyone around me has, trying to figure out if I'm okay? And the answer is yes. And it's embarrassing, I know. But it really is. The reality is we deal with it. And so let me see if I can explain this for you. So as I begin to compare myself, my tendency is to compare myself to other people. Look over my left shoulder, right shoulder, how am I doing compared to them? And then other people's tendency is to compare themselves to other people, and I feel better in comparison to how other people are comparing themselves. It just makes me feel better at the end. And I mean, this is the sick game we play, right? I mean, it's just like a revolving cycle. In fact, I once heard it said that if you speak out of your weakness when you do what I do, then you will never run out of material. Think about that for us. Got a slow burn. This is gonna be jam packed with material over these next weeks. This is one of my weaknesses. I mean, I've struggled with this since a child. I struggle with it today. I think many of us struggle with this. And by the way, my name's Kurt. I'm an addict. I'm an addict to comparison. And I'm also a pastor here at Cross Boys. So, you know, we're going to dive in and we're going to kind of discover things about ourselves throughout this series. Now, something real quick before we do anything else. Take out this card. You got a weekly earlier this morning. Take out this card. And it's inside your weekly. We're going to raise the house lights if we could just a moment, Brett. And grab a pen. And if you're a partner, regular tender, you know what to do with this card. Put your name on it. Any information that's changed. Eric referred to it earlier with some of the announcements. If you want to sign up for stuff, you can do that on the back. If you're a guest today, really excited you're here today, and we'd ask you to take a moment and fill out this card as well with as much information as you're comfortable with, and then place this card somewhere where you can refer to it later on this morning, as I'm going to ask you to pull it out later at the end of the teaching. So go ahead and just fill those out. When you're done, put it someplace close. Now, for me, I think this whole idea of comparison really did begin when I was a child. I mean, I remember, you know, looking out and seeing, am I normal compared to other kids? And I don't remember a lot about my elementary years, even junior high years, but I think like most people, this trap began in high school. I remember in high school, I was not smart. I know that surprises you, but so I hated smart kids. I'm like, oh, I hate them. They're smarter than I am. I wasn't overly cool. I know that surprises you too, and I hated cool people. I wasn't really creative or musical or dramatic, and so I hated, you know, those people too. I was an athlete, but I didn't have that typical athletic, like, hey, I'm better than everybody else in the school attitude, so I didn't really hang with them either. I mean, my small group was pretty small. In fact, I was the only one there most of the time. And so, you know, and what I found is that, you know, as I looked out, it was a lot. It's not like there's anything wrong with being cool or smart or creative. I just found it was a lot easier to hate people that I didn't measure up to, as opposed to really looking in the mirror and being honest with that reality. And I think for many of us, we find ourselves there. And it was kind of a defense mechanism. If we're honest, this becomes a defense mechanism. We begin to really kind of hate people that maybe are better than us in some way, shape, or form. We're like, man, I don't even like them. I don't like being around them because they make me feel bad just being in their presence. And what we begin to realize is, man, it is all about comparisons. In fact, you may have your stories on this as well. And so we're going to dive into this over the next 3 weeks. I really believe that there's some game change moments over these next weeks. Before we do anything else, let's take a moment and pray. God, I'm thankful that we can gather in this place. We can gather in a room. We can come into a place like this, regardless of our spiritual background or spiritual orientation. God, we know that people walk through our doors every week and are just trying to figure things out. And God, I believe you meet us here regardless of where we are. It's Mother's Day. For many of us, that day, we have very fond memories of our mothers. Others of us, it's a bit of a struggle on a day like today. And yet, God, I just ask today that as we dive into this topic of the comparison trap, help us to see that it is a trap. I mean, there's a trap that we daily fall into, and it's never a win-win situation. So God, help us to see today, maybe things we've never seen before. I thank you that as a result of our time in this room, that we might be able to go to new places. So I just ask that you help us to do that today. I pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. So this whole idea of comparison, you know, I am constantly, I'm going to self-confess, I constantly look to my left, I look to my right, I'm constantly trying to get a read, I've been doing it for years, and I'm trying to continue to work myself out of it, of trying to figure out, am I okay? That's really the big question when it comes to the comparison trap. Is what I'm doing okay? Is the way I'm living okay? I look at what other people are doing, I look at what they're doing, and what I've began to realize is it really comes down to we all want a bigger when it comes to the adjectives that we use to kind of describe ourselves. This is where we all live. We live in with the factor. That's what I'm calling it is today, the factor. And let me flesh this out a bit. We want to be richer, right? You want to be smarter. You want to be taller. You want to be talenteder. You want to be skinnier. Is that a word? I don't know if that's a word. You want to be happier. You want to be hipper. You want to be sexier. You know, you just want more It doesn't matter what it is. You want more of it because here's the deal. I feel better about myself when I have more right? I mean, you like going away from maybe you just had coffee with somebody or lunch with somebody, or you like leaving the office and saying, man, they were good. They're good, but I'm Everything about I'm better. I'm smarter. I'm wealthier. We like this. And then it gets worse. You begin dating. You begin dating and you want more in your date. You want him to be handsomer. You want her to be skinnier. You want him to be richer. You know, you have all these things that he needs to do or she needs to do to have more in their life. And then you get married and we want lots of when we get married, right? And the problem here is that we tell a lie to ourselves. We lie to ourselves, and I'm hopeful. One of my goals over these next 3 weeks is that you would stop lying to yourself, that you would begin to tell the truth to yourself about this, because you know what we say when it comes to our spouse? Hey, I don't want more here's what we say. I just want my spouse, my wife, my husband, to reach their full potential, because that sounds really good, right? I just want them to reach their full potential. And we start erring them. Oh, if you could have a little less here, a little more there. And before long, we're in the comparison game. And really, it's not about them, is it? It's about us. It's about what people think of us. And then you have kids. This gets really interesting when you have kids. So you have kids and you hear where everybody else's kids are going to school, or you hear about how everybody else's kids read a little quicker than your kids read, or how they're pooping outside the diaper a little sooner than your kids did. You know, I mean, everything about it, you know, they skipped a grade or they're playing up in their sports league. We're constantly looking to the right, looking to the left. How am I doing compared to everyone around me? And again, it's not really about them. It's not about your kids. It's about what people think about me as they look at my kids. In fact, you know, when you compare yourself to others, especially when it comes to parenting, you're really comparing your parenting to others. I mean, that's really what's going on. I mean, and let's be honest. You love it, right? You love it when their kids fail. I mean, you love it that whoever that family is that you're always looking back to see if you measure up, you love it when they just have a moment of failure. Now, you would never tell them this because you're a Christian, right? I mean, you're like, oh, Christians. I wouldn't tell them that, but here's what you do. Here's what you do. You're like, I am so sorry to hear that. Yes. I mean, like, what's up with that right there? We have these little private, little rejoicing moments when people fail that we're comparing ourselves to. And then there's like a whole nother group. I mean, there's like a subculture of the group. And this is for those of us in the room who are the type A anal personalities, the D's on the DISC profile. Is not enough. You have to be S'd, right? I mean, it's not enough to be rich. You have to be rich S'd. You have to be smart S'd. You have to be happy S'd. You have to be healthy S'd. You want to be retweeted S'd. I mean, whatever it is, you want to be in a category all by yourself. And we just want people to step back and go, whoa. I mean, that is a great specimen of a human being right there. Now, I'm not saying that I do this or anything, all right? I'm talking about some people I've observed. But maybe you have a slice of this too, all right? Maybe there's a slice of you that you like to be the smartest one in the room. You like to be seen as the happiest one, or the having the healthiest marriage, and you lie to yourself. You're like, oh, I'm just trying to reach my full potential. I just want to do my best. And we're going to see that there's a place for that. There is a place for that. But what I hope we'll really see is that maybe there is a thread of illness that runs through each and every one of us. I know it does in my life, where, you know, I am constantly measuring myself to everybody around me. I'm looking to my left, looking to my right. Am I okay? Trying to figure out if, you know, what I need to do next. Now, I know that for some of you, you are way more mature than me, and I'll give that to you. The odds are in your favor. All right, I know that some of you are way further down the road on this than I am. You're probably healthiest because you're a type A personality. And when I said a moment ago I hated smart people in school, you're like, oh, Kurt, don't hate people. That's not good. You shouldn't hate people. And I mean, if you never hated somebody because they had a little more er than you, then I applaud you. I mean, you must be a really strong person. Because what I find is anybody that has a little more er than me, I tend to get a little, I'm like, man, I want to be them. I want to be better than them. I want to be best. I want to, you know, this game plays out. And so, you know, what do you do? I mean, if we find ourselves in this place, what do we do? How do we begin to live where we don't fall into this trap daily in every interaction with our neighbors, with our friends, with our family? And so here's the bottom line that I really want to get at throughout this series. And if you don't get anything else out of this series, if you fall asleep in the next 3 minutes, if you don't come back next week, if you check out in the next few minutes, here's one simple idea, which comes from scriptures we're going to see in a few moments. And this one simple idea, you could take this idea. In fact, you might want to write it down, because this would be a great thing. If you struggle with what we talk about today, you might want to write this down and put it on a sticky note on the steering wheel of your car or on the mirror in your bathroom. Somewhere we're going to see it regularly, on your computer screen in your cubicle. Because, you know, this one thought could literally reset our thinking. And I believe this is one of the game change moments throughout these next few weeks right here. Here's the phrase. There is no win in comparison. There's no win. There's no win in comparison. There's no finish line when you're comparing yourself, looking left, looking right. There's no win. There's no sense of final satisfaction when you compare yourselves to people on your left and your right. I mean, if you're not measuring up to people, it doesn't help you. It's a lose for you. If you're better than other people around you, it's a lose for you. There is no win when we play the comparison game. In fact, it's really dangerous. Probably some of us in this room, you have debt, you have personal debt because you've been looking at what they have and what they drive, and she lives here and he has that and they vacation there. And at some point over the last years, you're like, man, I got to do this. This is what normal people do. I'm not okay. I need to live like them. And maybe one of the reasons that you're in debt, maybe there may be more reasons, is because you feel like you have to have more. I mean, let me be honest. This is a hard deal. This is a hard deal. And it's one of those things where, you know, you might be driving your spouse crazy right now because you're always expecting more. You want her in everything. You might be driving your kids crazy. You might be constantly pushing them, you know, pushing, higher GPAs. You got to get into this school. You got to play up. You might be driving everybody crazy around you. And let's be honest again, this is not about your spouse. It's not about your kids. It's about you wanting others to see you in a way that says, hey, I'm okay. I'm okay. It's very dangerous. In fact, I would venture to say that there are probably some of us here today that have relatives who maybe you're at odds with right now. And you just aren't getting along with them. And maybe the reason is because you're jealous. I mean, maybe you don't have that or live in that or drive this or wear that. And you wish you had all those things. And every time you see them, there's a bit of tension right there. And maybe your first marriage, you know, failed. And their marriage has been seemingly healthy along the way. And yet, when they hit that little blip, you kind of quietly just rejoice a little bit. You're like, oh, finally! I'm going to rejoice in the fact that they're struggling right now. See, this is the way this lives out. I mean, this is not a casual thing. This can be a very, very dangerous thing. In fact, here's how dangerous it can be. Two of the gospel writers, two of the writers, the authorized biographers of Jesus' life, two of them, this would be Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the first four books of the New Testament, two of them actually talk about when Jesus was arrested and handed over to Pilate, and there was this exchange that took place between Pilate and Jesus and the Jewish leaders, and the Jewish leaders are accusing Jesus, and Pilate's listening, trying to see if those things are really accurate. Pilate steps back and he says to Jesus, he says, hey, here's what their issue is with you. They're envious, they're jealous. You have something they don't have, and that's why they're bringing you to be crucified. They're envious. Jesus, you have the crowds. They don't have the crowds. You have the crowds that they want, and they can't get them, so they're going to crucify you. Is this how dangerous this can be? And in a much less extreme way, we have the same potential to hurt people. We have the same potential to be hurt by people because we have this tendency, we do it every day, to compare ourselves to the people around us. In fact, the wisest man to ever live, with the exception of Jesus, I mean, it was a guy by the name of Solomon, and Jesus is the wisest man ever. Solomon's probably a close second. And here's something Solomon said. He said, envy rots the bones. What he's saying is there is no win in comparison. And here's what I've been discovering. As I've wrestled through this, you know, there's places in the Bible where as you open up, you begin to read, you begin to see this. Now, if you're here today and you're not sure you believe the Bible, or you're not sure you really believe who Jesus is, who he says he is, or who God is, let me just tell you, let me just say, it's okay to read the Bible and not be a Christian. It's okay to not be a Christian and just be here kind of checking things out. It's okay to read the Bible if you're not a Christian. In fact, you know, you don't read things because you believe them, right? I mean, you read things to see if you believe them, right? I mean, you get the newspaper every day, right? You don't believe everything. You read it to see if you believe it. Well, you can do the same with the Bible. In fact, we have free Bibles out at Connection Point. If you want to take one with you, stop by today. So we're going to look at the book of Ecclesiastes. And if you're not really into God, not really into Jesus, not sure about all this, just start reading. If you're a skeptic, just take a read through the book of Ecclesiastes. I think this is what will happen for you. You'll start reading. You'll be like, Oh, I didn't know that was in here. I think I heard a song about that one right there. I mean, you're gonna find me a lot of the things in Ecclesiastes are things you've heard before. And here's what's amazing. Ecclesiastes is amazing, and it's a very safe book. If you're a skeptic, you know, this was before Jesus. There's no miracles. There's no crazy stuff happening. All right, this is a reasonably safe book, but it is jam-packed with wisdom that says, hey, when you experience this, maybe this has caused it, and you're going to step back and go, oh, my word, this is why I'm experiencing what I'm experiencing right now. It's full of wisdom. And so Solomon writes this book, and here's the deal. Solomon, he did more than you will ever do. Right, his wives were prettier than your wives, all right? You think you got some accomplishments? You will not compare to what Solomon accomplished. I mean, Solomon was one of the wisest men in the entire Old Testament in generations, in thousands of years. You know, he's one of the wealthiest men. Solomon created one of the seven wonders of the world. Kings and queens come and sit at Solomon's feet just to gain wisdom as it kind of eked out of who he was. And so Solomon, at one point, he looked out over the world, he watched what people were doing, and he began to address this issue of comparison. And so in Ecclesiastes 4, here's what he says right here. He says, and I saw that all toil, what did he say? All toil. He said, I saw that all toil and achievement spring from one person's envy of another. And you're like, what? He's like, yep, that's what I saw. He's like, I'm a people watcher. I'm observing, I'm looking out over people, the people that I'm seeing living their life, and I'm observing that as a student of behavior, the one thing that drives people is competition. And he says, you know, people are looking over their left shoulder, they're looking over their right shoulder, they're constantly looking at what everybody else is buying and driving and living and wearing, and they're doing this to say, hey, am I okay? They're trying to say, do I compare with where everybody else is? And he says, all of their toil is driven by the envy of one another. Now, when I read that, I thought, this was 3,000 years ago. I can feel pretty good about the fact that I'm still dealing with this today. I mean, this has been going on for thousands of years right here. Makes me feel better about my issues. Maybe I'm just rationalizing. You see, Solomon is kind of saying, hey, my observation, it looks like everybody's determining whether they're okay based on how everyone else is doing. He's just saying, hey, this is what I've observed. I'm a student of people. It's kind of human nature. Everybody's prone to this. And here's his summary statement. He says, this too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And you're thinking, oh, Solomon, come on. You can't chase after the wind. What are you talking about? He's like, exactly. That's the point. You'll never catch it. You go running after the wind. There's no way to get a grasp on it. There is never a finish line when you fall into the comparison game. There will never be a sense of tranquility, never be a sense of peace. I want to hit the pause button for just a second here, because I know this is Mother's Day, and mothers, you know, we want to thank you throughout the day, but I want to say something to the men in the room for just a moment, because I know, man, if you're like me, you read this, and you're like, okay, so what Solomon's saying is I can just kind of sit back and not engage, right? I can just kind of sit back and not really be proactive. I can just kind of sit back and not really try. I mean, am I just supposed to sit back and fold my arms, have a seat, and sit and be idle? Now listen, this is Solomon right here. All right, this is the wisest person in the world with the exception of Jesus. Here's what he says next. Look at this. He says, fools, men, fold their hands and ruin themselves. All right, so Solomon's like, hey, don't think for a minute I'm telling you not to be ambitious. I'm Solomon. Have you noticed my gardens? Have you seen my temple? Get this, I have about 300 wives and 600 concubines. I'm a busy guy. I'm a busy guy. I can outdo you in nearly everything that you can do. You think you're good, I'm going to be better. And this is just Solomon achieved everything. He had everything. He owned everything. This is him looking out and observing what he's seen in other people. And so then this next verse right here, this next verse would be one that if you've ever been inclined to memorize a verse, I would recommend this next one right here. You might want to write this one down as well. This verse right here is the whole idea of him fleshing out, there's no win in comparison. Here's what he says in verse 6. He says, better is one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. Now, the Hebrew imagery right here and what he's talking about is very, very rich right here. He's saying, hey, better is one hand open where God can freely give or freely take away just as he would choose. It's better to have one hand open and just saying, I'm going to be content with everything I can hold with one hand than to learn to be content with two fistfuls, saying I'm going to grab everything possible. Because he says, when you're standing like this, there is no contentment. There's no tranquility when you're like this. It's only with one handful open, God freely able to give, freely to take as he wills, and learning to be content with what I can hold openly with one hand. This is the picture he's given us right here. He says, you will never be at peace when you're like this. If you think, man, I've got to go after, you're thinking, Kurt, you're telling me to be satisfied with half. Hey, this is the wisdom of a guy who had everything. He's looking out and he's saying, hey, the key to life, be content with what you can hold openly in one hand. Because when you have two hands, you know what you have to do? When you grasp everything you can possibly hold with two hands and you pull it in and hold it tight, you immediately are going to need a third hand because you're not going to be content. He says, there's toil right here. There's toil. This leads to disaster right here. Richest guy in the whole world for generations and generations says one handful, not two fistful, one handful with tranquility is better than two fistful. In fact, I'd like us to say that together. Let's put that phrase up there. I want us to say together, better is one handful with tranquility. Say that with me. Better is one handful with tranquility. I want you to drill this in your mind. In fact, put your hand out like this, if you will. I mean, just say it, just open-handed. Better is one handful with tranquility. And I know that there are people that listen to podcasts, and you may be driving in your car or working out right now. Say it in your car. So let's say it one more time. Better is one handful with tranquility. Let me tell you what. If you let that thought right there just kind of settle in on you for a moment, I mean, if you let that one thought settle in and begin to take hold and take root, as you begin to have one hand with tranquility and you begin to reach for more and say, what else can I get? Let this thought guide you right here. I mean, when you begin to ignore your family because there's another account you can go after, remember the writer says, one handful with tranquility. When you begin to compare your son or your daughter because you see what all the other sons and daughters are doing, remember one handful with tranquility. Let this guide you. You know, when you begin to say to your husband or your wife, you know, my friend's husband's a little richer than we are. When you have the propensity to grab on with two hands, remember one handful with tranquility. He says, there is no win in comparison. You are chasing after the wind if you don't live with one handful and find that tranquility. Wisest guy in the world said, better and better is one handful. And we have to ask ourselves, do I believe that? Do I really believe one handful with tranquility is better than two fistfuls, holding everything I can get my hands on? And you're thinking, oh, Kurt, man, it's in the Bible. Of course I believe that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in the context of your life, with your kids, with your spouse, can you say, I could actually live? I mean, think about, this is a game change moment right here. Think about what life might begin to look like for you if you begin to live one handful, open hand, God can freely take, freely give with tranquility instead of, let me get everything I can possibly hold and I still am not satisfied. I need a third hand, a fourth hand. Solomon, smartest guy in the world. He goes on, verse 7. He says, again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. Hey, would you be interested in sitting under Solomon? He's like, hey, come take, I'm going to tell you about all the meaningless things in life. Grab a pencil. Let's talk about meaningless things. He's like, I saw another meaningless thing under the sun. He says, there was a man all alone. Now, we don't know what this phrase means. We don't know if this is a group of people he's referring to. Like, there are certain ways that groups of people live, and there was a man that kind of epitomizes that, or if this was like a friend of his that was all alone. But what Solomon's doing here is he's observing what he's seeing. And he says, there was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. Now, what he means there is this man had gathered all kinds of things. He had all kinds of assets, of valuable things in his life. And in that particular culture, you could not inherit something if you were a woman. So what this is saying is he had neither son nor brother to give his inheritance to. So he worked for it all. He had nobody to give it to. And it says, there was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. So he's like, here's a guy. I'm watching this guy, whether it's a category of people or a friend that he had. He said, here's a guy that just works. And I've noticed he works all the time and he's never content. He's always going after another goal. He's trying to always achieve more. He's always ignoring his family and if for the sake of having one more goal met in his job. He says, he's working. There's no contentment. He's living like this. I've got to get more. And he says, there's always more to build, always more to achieve. And then one day, amidst all of this work and toil, somewhere in there, he begins to stop and he asks himself a very important question. This question is huge. And it's going to be easy for you to read this question and just be like, oh, yeah, that's a good question. That's what we usually do when we read, oh, yeah, I like that. Now, this has some weight to it. You're going to go, really? Really? I mean, is this what I'm doing right here? Here's the question we have to ask ourselves. The man asked, for whom am I toiling? Who am I doing this for? Why am I living like this? I'm constantly looking over my left, constantly looking over my right. But who is it for? And then he goes on, for who am I toiling, he asked, and why am I depriving myself of this enjoyment? I mean, I've got this family, and yet I just keep going after more. I'm not even enjoying them. I've got this nice house that I live in that most people in the world would love to live in, and yet I'm not satisfied with it. I've got, you know, kids, and I'm not really spending time with them because there's always another account to get. He's like, for whom am I toiling? Why am I not enjoying this? Because if I'm honest, I'm constantly looking to my left. I'm constantly looking to my right, saying, hey, am I normal? Am I normal? Am I keeping up? And whenever we compare, there's no end. It just drives us to always want more. So then Solomon kind of summarizes this. And he says, this too is meaningless, a miserable business. I mean, some of us have lived that. We're living that right now. We're living like this. We're constantly grabbing for more. And we're realizing, man, I always, as much as I have, I need more. And it's a miserable place to be. Miserable. He's saying you can have two handfuls, and when you get two handfuls, you're going to need a third. You're going to need a fourth. The only way to find peace and tranquility is one handful, open-handed, where I can receive more or God can take more. I mean, this is a game-change moment right here. I mean, this bottom line, there is no win when we compare. And so here's what I really want us to dive into over these next few weeks. I want us to really ask the question, what would my life look like if I lived this way? I mean, what happens if I begin to catch myself, if I'm living like this, and I start going after more? And I'm not talking about not being ambitious. I'm talking about being content and saying, God, I'm going to trust you're going to continue to provide, but I'm not going to live like this. Everything I have is going to be like this. And what would my life look like? Would I have more peace? Would I have more tranquility? And so I want to kind of walk this out with us as we wrap up. So take out your connection cards that I referred to earlier, and on the back side are some next steps. And every week we give these to you because we really want you to have some practical ways to say, okay, what does this mean for me? And I want you to just hold this card and grab a pen and hold these in your hands for a moment. And here's what I want to do. I want to ask a few questions over the next few moments, and because I want to get you as stirred up as possible before you leave here today. I mean, I just want you, this is going to be the make you mad moment of the morning, all right? Over these next few minutes, you're going to be like, man, I wish he would have stopped 4 minutes earlier, all right? So I want to ask you a few questions, and I want you to just kind of think through, you know, where do I play the comparison game? So here's the first question. Are you exhausted from keeping up with blank? Who's the blank? Ask yourself, am I exhausted for keeping up with blank? I mean, is there something inside of you that just says, man, I don't even want to know where they vacation. I don't even want to know how much money they make. I don't even want to know what kind of car they drive. Are you exhausted from constantly looking left, constantly looking right, and trying to keep up? See, if you lived on a farm way out in the middle of nowhere and you didn't have internet access, you only went into town once a week, you would not be looking over your shoulder all the time. You'd be isolated. It'd be easy to be content with what you had. But see, daily, you're surrounded with people who have more who have more est. And here's the deal, I hate to break it to you, there's always going to be somebody that has more est than you. There's always going to be somebody that has more But are you exhausted from trying to keep up with blank? Another question, are you broke from trying to keep up with blank? I mean, do you constantly look over your shoulder to the left, to the right, and maybe your financial issues you're dealing with right now are because at some point you've just constantly been saying, hey, where are they going? What are they driving? What are they wearing? And this just escalated your debt. It may not be the whole picture. I mean, you could say, oh, it's the economic condition of our country right now, or, you know, or it's the job market. But my guess is there may be, just maybe, a part of this comparison trap you've fallen into, and that's a part of your debt problem right now. Here's another question. Are you allowing what others have to keep you from enjoying what you do have? You know, one of the things I noticed a few years ago, my brother-in-law, it does really well in business, and whenever we go to his house, I always come back wanting more. I have 8.5-foot ceilings in my house. I walk into his house, he has 10-foot ceilings, and I come home, and I'm like, Julie, I hate our house. I feel like I got to walk around like this all the time. I just feel like the ceiling's caving. We got to get a new house. It's not tall enough for me. Now, what's interesting, my house didn't change, but I changed, right? Because I looked over my shoulder to the left and the right and said, oh man, what I have doesn't compare. There's always going to be somebody that has more. Are you allowing what others have to keep you from enjoying what you do have? Solomon says, hey, it's chasing after the wind. You will never get it. Do you enjoy your kids? Or are you just driving them crazy? I mean, are you always pushing so hard for a higher GPA, to be in the gifted and talented, to play up in sports, to be like Johnny? You know, are you constantly are you driving them crazy? I mean, you know, can you take a deep breath and just enjoy them? I mean, can you just enjoy that man, they're there and they're okay the way they are? Can you enjoy them? Here's the stark reality. If you've got kids, there are people that wish they had your kids. I mean, there are people who can't have kids and they wish they had yours. And you have to ask yourself, am I enjoying them? I mean, God's given them to me. Am I enjoying them? You know, this is an interesting one because for some of us, we were probably raised in a performance environment where, you know, we only knew this idea of achieving and performing to get the love of our parents. And so you're just constantly driving and pushing your kids and you're teaching them the same thing. It's like the cycle just continues. Okay, can you just inhale and exhale and enjoy your kids this week? Here's another question. Is it possible that your husband or wife feels like you're dissatisfied with them because of your propensity to compare them? Now you're smart, all right? You're smart. I know you're smart. I know you don't say things like, well, honey, you know, so-and-so down the street's a lot richer than you are. I mean, you've learned. I mean, that you tried that once, and it did not motivate them. You know, you were sleeping on the couch for the week. I mean, you know, you realize, I mean, they're like, oh, they make more money, then let me just go find another job. Or maybe, you know, you mean she's skinnier than I am? Well, thanks for pointing that out. Let me go work on that right now. I mean, you know that doesn't work. All right, we're not that blatant, but here's what happens. In our minds, we're constantly comparing. Man, does my spouse measure up to his? Is my wife as attractive, as cute, as sexy? Is my husband as successful? Is he richer? We play these out in our minds. It may never come out in words, but our body actions tell. I mean, we have that little look like, man, I wish you were like her. I wish he was like you. I mean, we play this out. Let me tell you what. At some point in your life, you said that relationship, that marriage was the single most important thing in your life. I mean, and you may be doing some big damage to it because the constant comparison game. Can you get out of the land of Ur, the land of Est, and say, hey, I'm going to be happy with one handful. I'm not saying that your spouse is, you know, one hand. I'm just saying, can you be content? This is what God gave you. Can you be content right there? Can you be content? And the last one. I hate this one. This is my least favorite. Who would you secretly enjoy seeing fail? I hate that question. I hate it because I do it. Who, you know, this really reveals, I think, one of the darkest sides of the human condition right here. I mean, I think, you know, we often are looking to the left and to the right, and we're trying to keep up and make sure we're okay compared to everybody else. And when that person we're using to compare ourselves to, which seems to be successful, seems to have more or more S than we do, we see a small little blip in their success, you know, journey, a little failure, maybe their kids, you know, get in trouble or don't get into the school of their choice. And secret, we're like, yes, we rejoice. We're like, man, finally. I tell you what, that's evil right there. I mean, there's nothing beautiful about that. Who would you secretly enjoy seeing fail? You do that. I do it. So don't you use these questions and look over your next steps and just as you listen to the band, you know, God wants to move us out of this. He wants to move us into win-win, where we get our identity beyond looking to our left and right. But it's a trap we fall into every day. So look over your next steps, see if there's maybe one that just really connects with where you are. Maybe there's some steps you need to walk out this week to begin to rebuild some relationships, to instill value, to go to a new place. So read over those, reflect, and listen as the band sings. Thank you.